spot him.
Shia LaBeouf.
He's following you, about 30 feet back. He gets down on all fours and breaks into a sprint. He's gaining on you.
Shia LaBeouf.
You're looking for your car, but you're all turned around. He's almost upon you now, and you can see there's blood on his face. My God, there's blood everywhere!
Running for your life from Shia LaBeouf. He's brandishing a knife, it's Shia LaBeouf. Lurking in the shadows, Hollywood superstar Shia LaBeouf. Living in the woods, Shia LaBeouf. Killing for sport, Shia LaBeouf. Eating all the bodies, actual cannibal Shia LaBeouf.
Now it's dark, and you seem to have lost him. But you're hopelessly lost yourself. Stranded with a murderer, you creep silently through the underbrush. Aha! In the distance, a small cottage with a light on. Hope! You move stealthily toward it, but your leg! Ah! It's caught in a bear trap!
Gnawing off your leg!
Quiet, quiet.
Limping to the cottage!
Quiet, quiet.
Now you're on the doorstep. Sitting inside, Shia LaBeouf. Sharpening an axe, Shia LaBeouf. But he doesn't hear you enter, Shia LaBeouf. You're sneaking up behind him. Strangling superstar Shia LaBeouf. Fighting for your life, it's Shia LaBeouf. Wrestling your knife, it's Shia LaBeouf. Stab it in his kidney. Safe at last from Shia LaBeouf.
You limp into the dark woods, blood oozing from your stump leg. You've beaten Shia LaBeouf.
Wait, he isn't dead. Shia, surprise, there's a gun to your head and death in his eyes. But you can do jujitsu.
You can do it.
Body style superstar Shia LaBeouf. Legendary fight with Shia LaBeouf. Normal Tuesday night for Shia LaBeouf. You try to swing an axe at Shia LaBeouf, but blood is draining fast from your stump leg. He's dodging every swipe. He parries to the left. You cover to the right. You catch him in the neck. You're chopping off his head now.
His head topples to the floor, expressionless. You fall to your knees and catch your breath. You're finally safe from Shia LaBeouf.
Welcome, America. This is the Chris Trail Tirade. We are in week 6. It is Wednesday, October 28th. I'm your formerly herniated host, Chris Trail Dobek. And tonight we have a very special guest with us. Live from Delaware, Ohio, we have Colin McGarry. Say hello, Colin.
Hey, everyone.
So Colin is Colin's an interesting character. He's going to be talking with us today about things. What is he going to be talking about with us? Well, we will find out after the radio break here in just a moment so I can do the intro.
The madman of the Midwest, the common denominator of Cleveland, keeping the trails really trill. He's doing it for the people, the little engine who literally can't even. Live from Delaware, Ohio, it's the Chris Trail Tirade.
Hey-o.
All right, so welcome to the Chris Trail Tirade again. It's Wednesday, October 28th. It's my dad's birthday. Dad, if you're listening, happy birthday. And if you're listening later on the podcast version, happy birthday. Belated. I already talked to you earlier today, so I don't feel terrible saying that. Anyway, so Colin here is, tell us about yourself, Colin. What's your majors?
So I have a medieval studies and accounting double major with a classics minor.
That sounds really hard in the accounting department. I did take accounting 217 once upon a time. And then medieval studies, that sounds interesting and or hard. What's medieval studies like?
So it's pretty interesting just because it gets like so many different topics. You have literature classes, religion classes, music classes, art classes, and then naturally you're also going to have the history classes. So it covers all sorts of topics, which sort of makes it easier than you would expect, because it means you can get so many of your distribution credits out of the way without having to take too many classes outside of your major.
That's probably a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely makes trying to do a double major a lot easier, especially when they're so different like accounting and medieval studies are.
All right, so you like medieval studies, and if you're a fan of history, like you, myself, and I assume all three of our listeners are, you probably know, and I assume that would be the case because you'd be a pretty crappy medieval studies major if you didn't know that medievalism goes from, like, basically the end of Rome through, like, 1452 or 92, depending on who you ask. Where's your area of interest slash expertise?
I tend to do very early medieval stuff. So around fall of Rome, so I would put at around 410, which also includes some late Roman stuff, depending on where geographically you look, up until around year 800, so ending right when the Viking Age starts off.
So you say that Rome ends in 410. That's interesting. I assume that 410 is normally like when Alaric socks Rome there, if I'm not mistaken. Or is that correct, or where would... Why 410 instead of 472, like most historians go with?
So I do 410 mostly just because geographically I tend to look more at the British Isles. And 410 is about when the Romano-British sort of cast off Roman rule. Rome officially declares them separate in 411, but by 410 the British were sort of independent in all but name. They were maintaining their own armies and running their own governments.
Okay. So that obviously is a very interesting time period. Historically speaking, historically with air quotes, that's kind of the period of King Arthur, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Yeah. So let's talk about movies involving King Arthur, because as you may or may not have figured out, the Chris Jail Tire has run out of things to complain about, because I'm really not that complainy of a person, knock on wood. So we kind of like to spitball it here, of which we're going to talk about King Arthur and movies right now. Your favorite movie that has to deal with King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table?
That would definitely have to be Excalibur.
Really? Why?
So a lot of different reasons, really. Part of it is just effects-wise, it's pretty gorgeous, which is saying something because it's from 1981. So
I was going to say that is an 80s flick if I can think of one.
Yes, it's 1981. And so part of the effects, they sort of, some of them come off as cheesy, but a lot of the effects hold up pretty well, especially if you compare it to to films that are, like, closer to modern day. Just the practical effects hold up a lot better than old CGI effects.
All right.
Also does a really good job of sort of combining all the different mythic traditions of King Arthur.
Okay. So a lot of combination of mythic traditions then, because obviously the Arthur canon isn't just one thing that basically, you know, here's a guy, here's, you know, who he was, we don't even know if he was real or not, and so I, at least that's how I've always been told, and so it kind of combines everything from like Thomas Malory's La Morte d'Arthur to I assume all the other stuff in the canon.
Right, so sort of like some of the basic stuff will just contradict each other. So you famously have the sword and the stone, but then you also have a bunch of other myths, which are also fairly well known, probably because it's what they use in the Monty Python film, is the Lady in the Lake.
Yeah, I guess that is probably what most Americans know King Arthur nowadays.
Hmm. Right, so it does a really good job of sort of taking these seemingly contradictory myths and finding a way to make them work. So, like, in the film, he originally gets Excalibur as the sword and the stone, but he ends up breaking it, spoiler alert, and getting it repaired by the Lady in the Lake through, you know, magical stuff that's never explained.
He's like, hey, girl, yo, fix my sword. You know, throw it in the water and ba-boom.
Yeah, pretty much.
Huh, cool. Do you have a favorite story from King Arthur? It's like, you know, the legends, or is it just like, eh?
Not so much. My favorite story of King Arthur himself would probably be Coolwick and Olwen, which I'm probably butchering the names. I don't actually know Welsh that well.
Well, Welsh is the hall that we used to live in last year. Welsh, I assume, is what you're referring to?
Yes.
Sorry, I couldn't resist. Always don't forget that basically it's just a conversation.
Yeah.
So we're good. But, yeah, so you want to talk about that? Because I've never heard of Cool Whip and Owen.
That's actually not many people have.
Cool
a lot
Whip.
Of
Sorry, I was thinking of the Family Guy mm-hmm. scene with Cool Whip. Keep going.
So a lot of the mythic tradition that we get now come from the later medieval romances. So that's, you know, once you get more into high medieval, which is where you have the knights in shining armor and big classic medieval castles and all that stuff. Cool Whip and Olwen comes from a lot earlier Welsh tradition, which goes back really into the Dark Ages and is a lot closer to the time period where we would expect Arthur to show up. So there are a lot earlier traditions, and it resembles a lot closer to the like old Celtic stories rather than the sort of medieval stories that we're more familiar with.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I feel like that happens a lot with very big name historical figures, air quotes again. So like George Washington, my personal favorite historical character, basically has been deified by the American public ever since his death, actually before he died. So like the whole like, you know, chopping down a cherry tree and his dad being like, Washington, did you cut down this cherry tree? He's like, I can't tell a lie, Dad. Probably never happened. The whole hippo's teeth thing. So, like, a lot of these big-name characters tend to not ever, you know, the stories that we associate with them are just completely fabricated and farce. Who do you think that Arthur actually is based mostly off of?
Well, I would say that none of the legends we're all familiar with tend to be really based on anyone. Not even Cool Whip and Olwen, which, as I said, is, like, it's the earliest Arthur story, or at least the earliest one we know of. It's very possible that there's older stories that we just don't have the manuscripts of. So none of those figures would be based on Arthur. But if there was a real Arthur, I would put my money on an Irish prince called Arthur MacAidan.
That name seems like it would be pretty much on the money, wouldn't it?
It is, which is actually really interesting. A lot of people who look at who look for historical King Arthur's, which is a fairly common topic, just because he's such a big name, everyone wants to know about who he really was. And a lot of the figures they bring up tend not to have the name Arthur. So actually finding someone who would make sense and is called Arthur is surprisingly standout-ish.
Yeah, that, you feel like more people would pay attention to that. Out of curiosity, so I don't know, like, the first thing about King Arthur, apart from what I learned in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and, like, very little I read in Thomas Mallory's La Morte d'Arthur. I'm butchering my French there. I apologize, my French listeners. I don't know French, so I can't say I'm sorry. Holy Grail, was that actually a quest that Arthur was looking for through his days, or is that just something they kind of threw together in Monty Python?
That's something that appears in a lot of the medieval romances. They occasionally, there's some people that argue that it's similar to an older Welsh idea, where he looks for a cauldron that's comes from like the Welsh version of the underworld.
Okay.
And some people try to draw that conclusion, although I don't really see the connection, just because the Welsh traditions tend to be largely ignored by the later romance writers.
Hmm. Interesting. So obviously you've heard like a lot of the Grail myths and, you know, things that we know where the Grail is, or here's what the Grail was. Do you ever hear the one about it's like a wooden bowl that they have in some like residential estate in England. I think it was King Henry VIII's. And basically it's just like this wooden cup and that they would like let people drink out of, but every time that somebody would do it, they would like chip a little bit off with their teeth so they could have a bit of the Holy Grail. So they have like this half-eaten wooden cup now. Is that not ringing a bell, or am I just absolutely going crazy here?
I'm not familiar with that, but I also haven't...
yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, but I also haven't studied so much the...
Grail myth?
Yeah.
Grail? There we go. Huh. Fair enough. Colin is also very well-versed on basically anything out of nerd culture from what I've learned through my year of knowing him, because it's definitely been over a year. We met in Latin last year. By the way, you should all take Latin. It's really the most useful language you can ever take. One of the things I know that you were ranting about on Facebook the other day was about zombies and zombie culture, of whether or not zombies would actually work together to try and eat humans, or if they would just independently eat. What was your opinion on that? I didn't actually read the whole article. I just kind of skimmed at it.
It's sort of just a basic question of why a zombie... Well, part of it is why zombies would swarm. There doesn't really seem to be that much of a reason for it. I mean, you could always say that, you know, if they're all drawn to one source, then that's just going to happen. But the other big one is sort of why zombies hunt humans.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they're just after, you know, either the brain or in some cases just, you know, just flesh. But so if you're going, so either way, you know, other zombies are going to have the same flesh, the same brain that humans have. And they're also a lot slower and can't use tools. So if a zombie's just trying to get food, wouldn't it make more sense for the zombies to try to eat each other? Just it's going to be easier prey, and if they're surrounded by each other all the time.
Do you think the zombies have free will? That's like a stupid question, I know, but like, do you think that they can choose who they want to go after? Or do you think it's one of those things, you know, and mind you, I'm talking purely in a fictional sense here, I guess, but...
If we're going by the sort of standard slow zombies that are in most films and such... I would have to say no, because if that happened, you would have to see them, you know, if they were making conscious decisions, they would probably be making other conscious decisions that we don't see. So if they're, you know, smart enough to pick priority targets, weren't they also smart enough to set traps and do stuff like that?
Yeah, that's a good point. So you are of the opinion that zombies do not have free will, in that they just happen to go after protagonists because it makes for good storytelling, I presume.
Well, also, it goes to a sort of standard saying with writing is this the most interesting time in your character's life? And if not, why aren't you showing me that?
Why do we need to have... This is something I guess I have to explain to the viewers. You know this actually perfectly well, that I want a sci-fi story that's not about, like, the genetically enhanced super soldiers saving humanity from the greatest alien threat in human history. Versus the other alien threats in human history. Anyway, I want the story of just like, you know, the accountant and the janitor hanging out together on board like a starship or whatever, and just having to go through like their daily troubles, which would basically be Seinfeld in space. However, I think that would be a great idea. And so I argue, why does every character need to have every story be the most interesting portion of their lives?
It's just sort of the classic idea that you need the most interesting thing to happen, because if not, it's just a boring story. So even when it is something, you know, like you use the example of Seinfeld, and you could fill this with just about any other, you know, sitcom, even if it's not an extraordinary life, you write in such a way that you're really invested, and it seems like something's interesting, just because it might not be something we deal with every day. So even if it's, you know, somebody going through their everyday life, if their everyday life is some job that we don't do, then that's going to be interesting to us. So a space janitor, even if they're not the most interesting person on the spaceship...
least interesting person on a spaceship. No offense to any janitor listeners out there.
Right. So even when it's not their life might not be the most interesting life on the ship, but their life as the janitor on a spaceship is going to be, you know, more interesting than their life as a janitor at a public school. So it's still the most interesting part of their lives. It's just not. The argument would be it's not the most interesting life.
Yeah, I guess that would make sense. I wonder what a space janitor would do that was significantly different than, like, a regular janitor, though. Probably nothing. Like, oh, man, I have to dump poop into space. Like, would that be what they would do? I don't know.
I imagine there would be just sort of some ejection button. I imagine you wouldn't actually need a human to do that.
Yeah, that's true. I'm kind of the opinion nowadays that most everything that we imagine, like spaceships and stuff, that are going to have very little human interaction at all. Probably most of it will be done by computers. Mostly just because I don't think that we're going to have astrophysicists train well enough to figure out, like, how we would, like, traverse the stars and use gravity as a slingshot and stuff for things. And so it'd just be a lot easier to have computers and stuff do it.
The other argument's also going to be that spaceships can go really fast once you're in space.
Uh-huh.
Because, I mean, once you don't have gravity, anytime you add just a little push, that velocity is just going to keep going. And especially if you're traveling between solar systems, you're going to have to go insanely fast. So you would have to have a computer pilot rather than a human pilot, because no human is just going to be capable of reacting to anything so fast to actually, you know, do anything useful with the ship.
I remember seeing a thing. Do you ever watch, like, the Discovery Channel, like, alien planet thing they had where it was they send, you know, like, 2064 or something. They send a bunch of robot probes to, I think it was called Darwin 4. I don't know why I remember this so well, actually, now that I think about it. And it was, like, three robots, and they go to an alien planet with alien life. And they show the big spaceship, and it has, like, a big metal shield in front of it because of all the debris that they're going to hit on their way to this planet. And I always kind of think to myself, you know, if you're going, let's say, that faster than light travel is a possibility, right?
Right.
You know, mind you, my physicist roommate's, like, cringing right now at the idea of faster than light travel, but sorry, Tom. Do you think, this is, I guess, just a physics question. In your opinion, like, flying through space, we're going to have to figure out a way to, like, make sure that, you know, crashing into the tiniest of pebbles doesn't blow a hole through your entire spaceship if you're going that fast, I presume. That would be a pain.
Yeah, you would, basically, you would have to just, you know, armor the hell out of that ship. Am I allowed to say that on air?
Yeah, you can say hell. I think that's fair game.
All right, but you would just have to armor the hell out of that ship, because you're moving fast enough that even if the mass is really small of whatever you hit, the velocity is going to be fast enough, it's going to really pack a punch anyways.
Mm-hmm. I guess the other argument is wormhole travel, which I'm a proponent of. We should invest in wormholes. See, this is, if I was running for president, that's what I would be doing, America, investing in wormholes. Because then, theoretically, if there's no debris inside a wormhole, just zoop and just whoosh. But then you get into some really weird questions of how the fabric of space is, really, and whether or not you can bend that, and what happens then. I don't know. Space and time really blows my mind. The whole thing I've been on lately is a very Calvinistic kick of, you know, time is a flat circle and that we have no, like, perception of it, but time is basically a constant and that it doesn't move. We just kind of perceive that it's moving in our heads because we don't have the brain power to, like, realize that our conversation now versus our conversation in 20 minutes is still occurring, but we just can't tell.
I think that's an interesting take on it.
You can say I'm stupid on the air. There's really nothing wrong with that.
The way I would say it more is it's not that we can't, is that it's a still thing that we can't comprehend moving, but rather it's something more like, you know, three-dimensional space. How I can move forward or backwards in a chair and jump up and down and move in any direction. Mm-hmm. So I would say time would have to be something more like that. And our comprehension is that we can only time travel at a rate of 1 second per second, and only in one direction.
So I assume by that logic, then, that you're kind of a fan of the multiple universe thing, that any time we make a choice that it goes in two different ways, or, you know, two different universal splits. You feel what I'm saying? I wish I had a whiteboard in here. That would make things 1,000 times easier to explain this.
I understand the theory of it, but I know it's kind of a weird concept.
I mean, when you get into the space-time continuum, it's all a weird concept. But, yeah, I feel. Well, my mind is significantly blown. Viewers, are your minds blown? Please post on Facebook and be sure to bring up the fact that your mind is blown by our tirade, even though I forgot to advertise that we're on this week. Oops. But, you know, our dedicated viewers are listening anyway, because they hope that I'm on and hear our delicious voices, regardless of whether or not I say we're on. So do you think time travel and time machines would actually be a thing then? Because, you know, the fundamental problem with time machines, I know I've heard you argue this, that in order to have a time machine, time has to be at least predetermined or postdetermined. Yeah, you could go backwards, I guess.
Basically. So if time traveling backwards, time traveling in any direction is always going to be the future for somebody. So if we go back in time 1,000 years, that means, you know, it's gonna have a predetermined future for whoever lives 1,000 years ago. And if we go forward 1,000 years, that means a predetermined future for us.
Wow. My mind's blown. That did not take much. So you think time travel is real or no?
Uh,
putting you on the spot here, I guess.
I would say it's definitely theoretically possible. I don't think it would be anything that we could achieve, or at least not time travel in the conventional sense.
Would you want to do it if you could?
I don't think so.
Really? Why?
Partially because just of like all the existential crises it would bring, with the fact that it would sort of disprove any sort of free will.
It would, in fact, have that issue that if everything's predetermined or, you know, determined, you know, predetermined relative to whomever is, see, to whomever, I learned that in Latin, to whoever, I guess the relevancy is, that would create some very interesting free will issues. Yeah, that would kind of stink. Huh. This silence is brought to you by the Community for the Deaf. That somebody told me to say that over the air, and I feel like that's a terrible thing to say now that I think about it. Like, oh my god, I apologize to all two people who heard that, because by now I assume one person stopped listening. And so, See, I'm trying to remember. We used to do this every day before Latin class. We'd sit in Elliot 2, was it 105? Yeah, it was 105. We would just sit there, you know, digger on about whatever it was that day. And I'm trying to remember, like, how did this start? How do we normally get these conversations to start flowing?
It sort of snowballed.
Yeah, it does kind of start to snowball. Our Latin professor, Dr. Fratt, would actually say, who cares? Why would you want a time machine? Who cares about what it actually looked like back then? This is the guy who teaches Latin, like, lessons and Roman history. You'd feel like, of all people...
The head of our classics department.
Yeah, who is holding classics club right now. Do you know what movie's supposed to be shown tonight?
I do not.
Hmm. Are you going to go over there afterwards?
Probably not. It'll be far enough into the movie, it's probably not worth checking out by that point.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
I know it's supposed to be a horror movie, but...
It is the last week of October.
It is. It's been every week of October, or, you know, every meeting in October, they've been showing various horror movies.
For all four.
Right.
What are you going as for Halloween?
Probably Medieval Warrior or something like that.
Wasn't that what you went as last year?
I believe it was.
Yeah, because you've tried to convince me to bring my chainmail down, and I completely skated around that and went as a pirate. Dr. Vitska thought that was the funniest thing on earth, though. So it was at least kind of worth it.
Oh, yeah, the slutty pirate costume.
Yeah, the slutty pirate costume. this year, speaking of slutty costumes, I was thinking of How I Met Your Mother and how they have the slutty pumpkin. Do you ever see that episode?
I did not.
Okay, it's hard to explain. However, this year I'm going as Neil Patrick Harris. And so, because I look so much like him, yeah, I roll.
Wouldn't that be just clean shaven with a suit? How is that different than your standard attire?
Ooh, dang, savage. Oh, you know what I wish we had right now on the radio? Is if I could, like, hit a button and they would have, like, you know, I don't...
Yeah, like the little soundboards.
A soundboard, that's the word. I was going to use, like, vocal emojis. Because I'm a millennial of the 21st century, and I don't know how to express things outside of very basic hieroglyphics made by some guy in Japan. So I was going to call them vocal emojis. Wow, that's really sad. So, that would be really great to have a dang, that savage one. Maybe I'll get that for next week. So I don't know how that's really that different. I might go as Neil Patrick Harris from a different show or movie and not How I Met Your Mother, because I feel like if I just go as him in a suit, it just looks like me in a suit, and that's not really a costume.
It always goes Dr. Horrible.
That's what I was planning. I have the glasses and the lab coat. Yeah, obviously I have the lab coat.
Do you have the starting lab coat or the ending lab coat when he joins the
Evil League of Evil?
Yeah.
Eagle League of Evil. Eagle. I cannot talk today. It's really bad. It's the starting lab coat, but that's because that's how most of the movie is.
Yeah.
I saw that maybe a month ago. I was watching that with a couple of friends, and I've been using quotes from that way too much lately, such as, look at my wrist, it's time to go. What about your clothes? I don't love these. That's a great movie. It's really short, too. It's like 42 minutes.
I know there's been talk of sequels popping up every once in a while. I don't know how serious any of it is.
Well, one of the problems was it was made during the writer's strike, so, like, they would need another writer's strike, basically, to get that to take off.
I mean, it has a big enough
fan base and following.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, it couldn't produce, like, a full feature film. But and Felicia Day has had a lot of success with her various web shows in the past.
That's
so I'm
true.
Sure they could, if they really wanted to, they could try to pull something off. Although, I would have to admit, I don't think that would actually be a good move.
Yeah, I don't. Do you like sequels for most movies?
It's, well, some movies do deserve sequels, but you have to...
Like, what movie needs a sequel? Because that's something I'm, like, really torn on, because I can't really think of a movie, yes, including The Godfather, that I really think deserved a sequel.
It's, well, some of them just sort of have enough unanswered questions that you need a sequel. So, Prometheus, which I really liked, although I know it's...
loves that movie. Happy birthday, Dad.
I know that it's generally considered not as good as Alien, at least.
It's a prequel to Alien, isn't it?
It's kind of a prequel, but it also stands alone well enough, which I've liked a lot. A lot of prequels tend to be very fan service-y. So the way that it was able to do everything a prequel should, while also standing on its own, I thought was really good.
Mm-hmm. Huh. So that's one you think that deserves a sequel?
I would say it should get a sequel, partially just because it was... was able to wrap everything up enough that I wouldn't be disappointed if they didn't make a sequel, but it also left enough unanswered that you could definitely have a lot more to explore with a sequel. Whereas the problem where you would say I can't think of movies that deserve a sequel, it's those tend to be movies where they wrap everything up nice enough that there's nowhere new you could go.
I feel like that's a lot of problems with storytelling in general, is that a lot of times authors, writers, whatever you want to call them, people who make stories, storytellers, tend to wrap things up very nicely and cleanly, and then by the time they actually have a story put together, all of a sudden they realize, oh man, I want to make a sequel because I'm making tons of money off this. But
where do I go from here? Especially a lot with the Wheel of Time series, which is a tremendously long series.
It's why I haven't started it.
I think it has something like, I know it has at least a dozen, it might even have 13 books by now.
Oh.
So it is tremendously long, and I remember reading the first one, and I really enjoyed the first book. Mm-hmm. And then I tried moving on to the second, I just couldn't get into it as much. Because it wrapped itself up so nicely in the first book that the second book seemed very unnecessary.
Didn't the author just die for that, Terry Pratchett?
I know it was...
Or is that not Terry Pratchett who writes those? Am I stupid?
I can't remember the author's name. I'm
Let's go to Google. Da, 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 da. The Evil League of Evil. It stuck right in my head.
I know the author did die fairly recently. I don't know if I would say how recently it was, but couldn't be more than like 2-3 years.
It was Robert Jordan and Brandon Sanderson. Does that sound familiar?
Robert Jordan, I remember, yes.
Okay, I thought he was the second guy who replaced the first guy, but no, apparently he's the first one.
He was the first one.
Huh, interesting. I'm going to then... one of my favorite things to do is when I type things into Google, and then I'm like, oh my god, I completely forgot what I was writing, or what I had Googled earlier. So when I typed in WH, I said, what do you call a snail's movement? And what goes well with brown corduroy pants? Also...
what goes well with brown corduroy pants?
I clearly had brown corduroy pants somewhere, and I was thinking, I need to figure out what goes well with these.
Isn't brown a good fashion choice because it doesn't really clash with anything?
Yeah, but it doesn't go with anything. Well, my parents would argue that head to toe, but I was really trying to figure... I was trying to figure out, like, because I have a brown corduroy jacket, and I figured, like, saying what goes well with a brown jacket would be harder to find than brown pants, so... When I Google when, I get, when can you tell if a beard will grow well or not? Or when does Breaking Bad pick up? I do not like Breaking Bad that much.
I still haven't checked it out yet.
It's, I got through basically halfway through season two, and I'm just like, I just didn't. See, to me, a good TV show can wrap itself up in 8 episodes. If you can't do it in 8, then you can't do it.
My problem's more that it's sort of overly praised. Anytime something gets praised
it's
that much.
It's hyped too much.
Exactly. So even if it's a fantastic show, you know, the way people are describing it, it can't really live up to it. So I'll probably check it out
10 years
later.
From now?
Yeah, you know, a few years from now when the hype dies down, and I can sort of watch the show just as it is and not with all the fan base raving on.
What show have you had ruined because of hype? Like, too much excitement?
I honestly haven't had that many shows ruined by hype, partially because I just watch a lot of old shows.
Yeah, you do watch a lot of old TV and movies.
Yeah.
You have a thumb ring now. Has that always been there? Or am I just noticing that for the first time?
I've worn thumb rings before. This is nice because it looks fancy, and I got a pack of three of these for like $2 at a craft store.
Yeah. You got thumb rings at a craft store?
Well, I mean, they're not actual rings, are they?
Okay.
But,
Did you
size adjustable, so.
Does it, like, hurt? I assume that's not, like, sanded down for fitting, then.
It doesn't bother me at all.
Cool.
I mean, I wouldn't, you know, have this on a writing hand or anything, but
yeah.
For just sort of daily use, I guess.
Question. You were thinking earlier about trying to create a Renaissance group, sort of like, not a Renaissance fair group, but a reenactment group of medieval, early Breton, Walda sort of style thing.
Yeah.
Early Romano-Britain, basically. How is that working out?
It hasn't really taken off.
Oh, I'm sorry. AKA, there's not enough people on this campus with active interest about early Roman history or early British history?
Pretty much. But we also have done zero advertising, so.
That is also true. How many people are there now at this point?
Right now, there's just myself and then Connor Jenkins, who's another sophomore. He's a history major.
Wasn't he your roommate last year?
Yes, he was my roommate last year.
I didn't
know
he was a history major.
Or I know he was either a history, or he either is a history or is thinking about taking history.
Interesting. Go figure. Okay, yeah. And then you're also in MRCA, which stands for Medieval Creative something else with a C, Renaissance Assembly.
It is... MRCA, the Medieval and Renaissance Recreational Combat Association.
Wow. That's quite the club. So last year I remember you were complaining with somebody, the bulwark of our Latin class. If you're listening for some odd reason, Mr. Glasgow, there's your shout out. And so I remember you were complaining that it was a very German style of fighting. Have they changed that, or is it still very German style?
Yeah, it is a very German style. And it's not so much the style as time period. Because it is sort of a high medieval. So I think it's around 14th century or possibly 1400s. I can't remember which.
Okay.
But, you know, the era of full plate and big two-handed swords.
It's not your favorite time.
It's not my favorite time. But as an introductory, I have to admit it works well. Because long swords are just easier to introduce people to. Because there's less to have to keep track of when it's just your sword and your opponent's sword rather than each having
sword, shield,
and
a spear, maybe.
Right.
So I assume you fought a lot of freshmen this year?
I don't think I've actually fought any of the freshmen yet.
Oh.
I've done, like, you know, like training with freshmen, but never, like, a sparring situation.
So
at least not with freshmen.
So you haven't fought the Iron Fedora yet?
I have not fought the Iron Fedora yet.
I want that to become a thing. There's a kid apparently in that who has a fedora, and I feel like if he was to get a Christmas gift, it should be like a fedora that doubles as a knight's helm and call it the Iron Fedora. I think that would be a great idea. Have you ever owned a fedora?
I actually did. Part of my... I had one that... Because I also do swing dancing. So I got it to sort of go with a fancier... 20 style swing outfit, although I haven't actually used it yet. It just sort of sits in my closet.
And you don't want to, like, touch it because it's kind of like a weird jellyfish that you're afraid to grab the wrong part and just sting you socially.
Yes, it's one of those things where it's like, I feel like if you're getting into sort of 20s to 40s, you sort of need to have one.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's built up a reputation in the modern day that's very different from its reputation in the past.
Well, you know why that is, right?
Yeah.
It's because, you know why, but I guess I'll keep explaining because I was hoping you'd say, no, tell me, so that I can explain to the viewers. One of the problems with fedoras is that, you know, our grandparents wore fedoras, and they looked cool in them. I mean, you know, the three-piece suit, they looked fly, they got the, you know, fedora, it all went together, it matched, it fit really well. However, we, in the modern day, or we should say, I guess, like, super nerdy people, not that we aren't super nerdy, but you get my point. See that and go, wow, they look really cool. If I wear a fedora and ignore all the rest of that, I'll look just as cool. thinking that's basically like the free ticket to looking really like super fly, to use rap culture terms, from 2005. So now you see people who walk around with fedoras on thinking that they look like hip or whatnot, but they just look really ridiculous.
You also have sort of less formal fedoras.
Yeah.
So if you think, you know, the classic fedora would almost always be
tweed with a leather, with a feather coming out of it.
Yeah, either tweed if you're looking extra jaunty that day, but also a lot of, you know, black and gray to go with a suit.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now you have, you know, like checkered and purple and all sorts of stuff like that.
I know you said purple because there's a guy on campus who always has a purple fedora, and every time I see that, I want to go sit down with him and kind of tell him how life is. Not that I really have any sort of justification to be like, I know how life is, and I'm going to help you fix yourself so that girls will talk to you. Maybe he's, if he's happy, by all means, kill it, dude. But, yeah, I've always kind of wondered about that.
Yeah, just go full Zoot Suit, get in a fight with some sailors. Good times.
The Zoot Suit riots of 1941. Solid reference. I'm impressed. That's an interesting part of World War II history there.
It is.
Yeah. Do you like World War II history?
I've
never asked you that, now that I think about it. Ah!
Is that mine or yours?
That's yours.
It is. Just got a... more notifications about an article for The Trident, our wonderful ancient, medieval, and Renaissance studies publication here.
That wasn't a plug in any way, shape, or form.
Definitely not. But World War II history. I think it's kind of interesting, although there's various bits and pieces that I find interesting. So I couldn't, you know, sit and read an entire history book on World War II. But, like, the Zoot Suit Riots, I think, are really interesting. And then I'm trying to remember the name of it. There was a really cool operation that was meant to fake out the Nazis for the Normandy landings.
Oh, it was, not Operation Overlord, that was what...
Yeah, Operation Overlord was the...
Was the Normandy landings.
Normandy landings.
It was... Ah, oh, I should know this. Why should I know this? I don't know, because I'm a history major, so I feel like I should know this.
You should know this. I did a history project on this, back in...
Yeah, but they had inflatable tanks and all sorts of fun stuff that...
Yeah, to make it look like they were...
going
to
land miles up the coast.
Right.
That's a good question. Anyway, yeah. See, my problem with World War II is it's so... That's like the first real major modern conflict in a way that, you know, basically everybody in the world was involved to some degree except for South America. And so you see a lot of the issue being that, like, more or less everybody has records from it, so it's an incredibly extensive history for a very short amount of time. And so you can spend your entire life between 39 and 45, you know, of your academic career and life. And so I can't stay in one period that long.
You also have, especially with Nazism, how they were very set on trying to invoke this sort of mythic past that actual history doesn't exist, but the idea of...
Yeah. We were reading in a PhD class that I'm in, politics and government, about the idea of, like, because we're talking about, like, race relations in the United States and talking about the Anglo-Saxon race and how, you know, its improvements in society have been doing things. And they were written by, like, Klan members and the like. And thinking to myself, this sounds exactly like Nazi mysticism. Which, then I said that to the class and everybody looked at me, what's that? Oh, yeah, I forgot that you guys don't know what Nazi mysticism is. That's
yeah, so there's all sorts of interesting stuff. So I remember there was a sort of early Iron Age cauldron, or what we thought for a long time, or say a long time, a few years, was a sort of Iron Age Celtic cauldron that ended up being made by the Nazis. And it looked so much like something that actually came from the Iron Age that... Like, historians thought it was genuine for years.
Oops. Awkward.
Right, and it was really, keep getting notifications.
Look who's popular, Mr. McGarry.
I know. It's funny, my phone hadn't gone off until, like, the show started. But, anyways.
I apologize, I've been Snapchatting halfway through the show here, and so I look really bad.
So, and how we found out it was, or I keep saying we, I mean, obviously I wasn't involved with this, but we
wasn't
as
wasn't that
the,
your grad school dissertation?
Obviously. We as the, as in the historical community, which I kind of consider myself a part of. So, you know, the historians ended up finding out it was not real, or not genuine, because somebody actually did a metal test on it and found that...
The radiation thing, right?
I don't think it was radiation. It was, like, they tested the gold itself and found there were alloys in the gold that were modern.
Ooh.
And that's how they found out this was sort of a Nazi fake.
Unless it was ancient aliens, of course, which is always a possibility. We can never rule it out. Do you believe in ancient aliens?
I do not.
Okay. That's probably, even if you did, I feel like that's not something you should put on the record in case you are going to grad school for medieval renaissance studies someday. And then to be like, you believe in ancient aliens. Get out of my room.
Yeah, I remember our former adjunct professor for our classics department was once asked to be on ancient aliens.
She was?
Yes.
Really?
Were you not there that day?
No!
Yeah, she was talking about how when she was in... this was our professor for our first semester of Latin last year.
Oh, my mind is so blown right now.
Yeah, she was an adjunct professor. She was only here for last year. She's at Wake Forest University now.
Yeah. Apparently she loves it there.
Oh, yeah. I say that like I know.
Oh, yeah, totally. We talk every day. Anyway, she was offered a spot on ancient aliens.
Yes, it was when she was a student at graduate school.
She was at Duke, I think.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
But when she was at graduate school, her professor was asked if she or anyone in her class would want to be on ancient aliens. She said that she would say no because, you know, obviously that sort of kills your career in academia, you know, once you get on ancient aliens. But she couldn't speak for her students. So they asked a few students, including our professor. And she said no for the same reason.
You know, I know that, like... You're taking an academic hammer to yourself for, you know, showing up and putting your face on ancient aliens. However, at the same time, I mean, you know, classics majors are one of the lowest paid majors in the United States. Like, return yield on that degree is much lower than, say, accounting, education. Education's not exactly the highest yield on the planet either. However, it's, you know, of, like, all of the majors out there, classics is one of the lowest. I feel like maybe I'd be willing to sell my soul out and pretend like I believe in ancient aliens. Just to, like, you know, I don't know.
It really was just a reputation thing. If I remember correctly, she didn't have to actually say anything about ancient aliens.
She could have just been, like, doubting Dave or whatever.
It was, like, all they wanted was somebody who seems legit to talk about ancient women.
Well, if anybody who could have talked about ancient women, it would have been her.
Exactly.
Because she did have a tattoo on her back that was, that sounded really weird that I didn't know that, that my professor has a tattoo on her back. It's upper neck. You could, anyway, it was Latin for mother. God, this just keeps getting more Freudian and Freudian by the minute now that I think about it. Yeah, my professor has a tattoo on her back that says mother. Oh, weird.
Don't forget the laurel leaves and everything.
Yeah, it did have laurel leaves. I wasn't sure if that was the same one. But she would have represented that well.
Yeah, I have all sorts of, or say all sorts of, I can only think of one more, of connections to people who almost did really cool things.
Well, that's sad. What was the other person?
The other one was, so back when I was in high school, I did theater for a bit.
Really?
I did.
Oh, wow.
So I do actually, I really liked acting, but theater kids weren't really my crowd, so.
Go figure.
But, yeah, so if you remember, there was this very historically accurate movie that came out a few years ago called Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunters.
Oh, my God.
And they did shoot a few locations back in Richmond, my hometown. And one of the other drama students at my high school, or I was at our sister school, which is a whole other thing, had the chance to be an extra in one of the scenes for Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter and turned it down.
I would have taken it. I mean, even if it's, like, the worst movie ever made by mankind.
Oh, it is a fantastic movie.
No, it's not.
I mean, if you can get into the fact that the entire movie is a joke, it's a pretty fantastic movie.
Isn't it based off a comic book?
I think it was either a comic book or a regular book. I can't remember which.
Can you imagine sitting there thinking to yourself, I'm going to write a book about where Abraham Lincoln, President of the United States, 16th president, you know, martyr of our country, writes... Or fights vampires with an axe. Like a fireman's axe, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I think it was a woodcutting axe.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he was the rail splitter, of course. Yeah, that was a thing. Huh. Anywho, we are roughly out of time here. Colin, do you have any other things that you'd like to add before we end the show here?
No, I think this is good. Thanks for having me on.
It's been more than a pleasure. So I'm going to play us off for the next 10 minutes just with stupid music. I apologize. Next, starting up, is Darude Sandstorm. Followed up by, I don't know, we'll see where we go from there.
All right.
So, all right, America, you have a groovy night. God bless.
Gonna set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire. Got a whole lot of money that's ready to burn, so get those stakes up higher. There's a thousand prayers.